Welcome to Brad Kyle's Brad's Motorworks podcast. We'll be talking about some things about BMW, some things of cars in general, and some things about car repair. I hope you find it educational, enlightening, and I hope it increases your understanding of your car. And maybe along the way we'll have some fun too. Thank you for listening, and here we go. Episode number 52, Parts Proliferation. The whys and what fors. Person could ask, well, what is parts proliferation, Brad? Typically, car makers would like to use the same part for multiple applications, rather than have to design a new part for every single thing. They tend to do this as far as using the same part over and over again, mostly with things like filters, fluids, most normal maintenance and wear and tear items, being, you know, brakes, water pumps, steering and suspension components, light bulbs, drive belts, gaskets and seals, which can vary with the engine design. Okay. So there are certainly a lot of parts on a car that are used in multiple applications. And of course, this is not just, you know, for one particular car brand. I mean, realize that any car brand, whether it be foreign, domestic, whatever, it's not like they're making every single thing for that car. They're not. Okay. Frankly, there's some car, you could call them manufacturers, but what they really are is assemblers. Okay. They design and, come up with the parts that they want, and then they go out to vendors and either give them the designs and say, this is what we want, make the part, and you're going to make it for, you know, this expense, so on and so forth. Or they co-design it with the vendor. Okay, but you know, obviously you have companies that make hardware, nuts, bolts, screws, things like that. You have other companies that do glass. There's companies that do sheet metal, so on and so forth. BMW specifically, the only thing they actually make, they make their engine castings, the major pieces, cylinder heads, blocks, oil pans, things like that. Typically, depending upon where the car is actually made or assembled, they usually do all their own sheet metal, where they're taking obviously raw sheet metal or stainless steel or aluminum or whatever, and, you know, forming the body panels. Okay, that's not always the case. It really depends. In Germany, typically that happens, but like as a, for instance, in the U.S. and South Carolina, it's called Spartanburg, but it's actually Greer, South Carolina, is where the assembly plant is for the entire world population of X Series cars for a BMW. They literally do no actual, what I would consider to be, manufacturing there. There's vendors that are all over in the area. The engines come over from Germany, pre-assembled. And then there's other companies that are doing a lot of the other, you know, again, they specialize. Okay. So getting back to the parts part of it, what would be considered fast moving, in other words, things like filters, fluids, spark plugs, things like that, they do try to, make multiple applications that where they're using thousands and thousands of the same part. Okay. Where it gets more interesting is when we start talking about specifically body pieces and body trim pieces, okay? And especially if a car, a particular model of car has more options available, okay? And I don't mean electronic type stuff. That can be part of it. But what happens is the body and trim pieces, they literally design them to fit certain series of cars, and that's it. Okay. So what happens is that you potentially have a rather limited production run, okay, of parts, because they only fit, you know, this year model of BMW or whatever the case may be. Okay. So what's interesting is this, you know, this parts proliferation, meaning that there's just way, way more part numbers. Okay. To where, again, if a part only fits certain applications, especially if it's a body or trim part, then there's going to be a fewer, production run of that part because they make fewer of that particular model in that particular trim. Okay. What's interesting is that this whole issue is typically more so with crash parts. Okay. In other words, parts that are damaged that need to be replaced when a car is actually in some kind of an accident and there's been impact damage. So it gets interesting in that supposedly, according to the Auto Body Repair Shop Associations and for that matter, like AAA insurance, the average car is at a body shop for either some kind of paint and or body work, in other words, it's been in an accident, once every 5 years. Okay. So the manufacturers look at it as, rather than make a particular part where it fits multiple models, and it's, there's a higher production run, so it's easier to get, which also means it's typically less expensive because of supply and demand. They choose to change little things, okay, to where that particular part will only fit fewer models, and for that matter, certain trim packages within that model line, okay. So, what happens is that you have more and more part numbers available with fewer and fewer parts of each production run, okay. Also, for that matter, what some manufacturers will do, like BMW typically builds and designs and produces a car for about usually around a 6 to 7 year production run. Okay, so in other words, a new model comes out that's never existed before. It's going to be in production for probably about 7 years, approximately. Okay, now they may make it where it's the same throughout that entire production run. Then again, they may decide because of sales and so on and so forth that they're going to do a mid-production change where it's what they call like a facelift. So they're going to change little things on the car, whether it's, well, the headlights are a little bit different looking or a different shape now, and the taillights are a little bit different. And, it's going to be kind of somewhat little things, but all of that stuff, by the time you bring it to production and to actually sell it, that means like if they change the shape of the headlight assembly, okay, it's not just the headlight assembly that gets changed. It's everything around that headlight assembly has to have either a different shape or made differently or whatever the case may be, whether it be a, a fender piece or a headlight surround piece or whatever the case may be, the way that maybe the way the headlight mounts, so on and so forth. So when, if and when they do that, then it makes it harder. I mean, ultimately, what they do this all by design. Okay, it's on purpose. And what happens is that for any outside part vendor that is, let's say is an aftermarket part supplier or manufacturer, it makes it harder for them to decide to make the investment to tool up, whether it be dies and tools and things like that. But it makes it harder for them, more expensive for them to tool up to make a production run of something that fits fewer models, okay? Or and fewer numbers of that particular model. Okay, so what happens is they choose not to do it. It's not cost effective for an outside company to do it. It's not to say they can't. Okay, it's totally up to them, but the business model doesn't support it. So what happens is it forces body shops, and anyone who wants to buy that particular part, that either they're getting a used one from a wrecking yard, a salvage yard, or they have to go back to the dealer and the dealer network to buy the part because it's not available anywhere else. Okay. Hence the term parts proliferation. Okay. By design, they're making it, the manufacturer is making it harder for an aftermarket parts manufacturer to tool up and profitably make a new part. Okay. Since that part fits fewer cars. They're creating basically a parts monopoly, is what the manufacturers are doing. Which a person could say, well, wait a minute, a monopoly, that's not legal. Well, it is totally legal since the aftermarket supplier can choose or not choose to actually go ahead and make that part. Okay, but they have to look at it again from supply and demand. If that part only fits whatever, let's say, 10,000 cars, or whatever the case may be, they've got to decide whether they want to go down that road or not and go ahead and tool up and make that part, okay? Because it obviously costs them money. And if they realize that they don't feel they're going to get their money back, then they're just not going to do it, okay? It is a decision. So by design, again, the parts man or the car manufacturer essentially is creating a parts monopoly market, but it's not illegal. Okay. But it just makes it harder for everyone to get that part at a fair price because they're creating their own supply and demand type of a situation. Okay. The downside to it, of course, is that when there's fewer available sources or options of where to buy it, the manufacturer can charge whatever the market will bear. Okay. And they, you know, they know that. So, you know, again, they can manipulate the market. You know, it gets to where, I mean, one of the things I'm seeing, well, as a, for instance, with BMW specifically, there's what's called the M cars or motorsport cars. You can be rest assured that any part that has the M logo on it, okay, which normally is going to be on a motorsport car, but that's not always the case. But any part of a car, whether it be a trim piece or a steering wheel or certainly, obviously, suspension components, so on and so forth. But if it has the M logo on it, BMW Motorsport logo, you can be rest assured you're going to pay at least twice as much for that part, even though it could be the same trim piece as what's on a regular car. But if it doesn't have the M logo, it's half the price, okay? They can charge whatever they want, whatever the market will bear, okay? And certainly there's parts on M cars, whether it be suspension or engine parts or whatever, that are only applicable to an M car. And again, they charge whatever they want, okay? Now, since M cars are typically limited production, a person who's buying that car, hopefully they understand what it is they're buying. And maybe that's, you know, to them, that's a plus. Hey, they only made 5,000 of this car in the entire world, and I have one. Okay, fine, but just understand that, again, when you go to buy replacement parts for it, you're going to be paying for it. So if you can afford that and you're okay with it, great. It just gets more interesting when, as the car ages and each person, you know, each successive owner maybe is less capable of properly maintaining the car. So, you know, again, the car can start to lose value potentially. The other thing that I see happening, and again, you know, I've been working on BMWs for 35 plus years. One of the things I'm seeing more recently happening, and again, this is by design, is understand like when a car manufacturer either designs a part themselves or they, in cooperation with a parts manufacturer, they design a particular part. Let's say this particular is going to be an ABS control module, okay? Their contract with them could be a situation where the manufacturer says, look, this is what we want. We'll co-design it with you. The initial run of these, the first, whatever, 20, 50,000, 100,000, whatever, they're all going to have our logo on it, the BMW logo, and they can only be sold through the BMW dealer networks. In other words, BMW is the only one that's going to be buying that part, okay? So, of course, they can charge accordingly. They certainly should get their initial investment back. There's no doubt about that, okay? And then the contract may say, well, after the 100,000, now you can make the same part or something similar to it, but if it's not being sold to us, it can't have the BMW logo on it, and you guys can make it however you want to. We don't care, okay? So that could go on for quite a long period of time, okay, where now the parts manufacturer is making potentially two different parts, one for BMW and one for the outside world. And typically the one for the outside world, it could very well be exactly the same as the BMW part, but it doesn't have the BMW logo. It's going to partly depend on the contract that was originally started between the manufacturer and the parts supplier. Okay. But what gets interesting is where on older cars, that same control module, let's just say as a for instance, that contract ends. Maybe it was a few years long or 10 years long or whatever, and that contract ends, okay? Now the manufacturer may go back to the parts supplier and go, okay, our contract is ending. What's going to happen now is you guys can no longer make them to the outside world, okay? You're going to start making them again where they only have our logo on them. and you're only going to be selling it once again to the dealer network. Okay. So all of a sudden, as a for instance, I mean, my own car, I've mentioned it before, I've got an 02 530i E39 chassis manual transmission car. It's common on that car on the E39 for the ABS DSC control module to go bad. Okay. They were originally made by Bosch. Certainly when the car was new or relatively new, you could only get that part from the dealer. But then for many, many years, you could buy it through outside suppliers, okay, wholesale distributors or whoever. And again, it was a Bosch item. It was made exactly the same as if it was made for BMW. And you got it for like half the price because neither you nor who you bought it from was paying BMW price. Well, what started happening about 2 or 3 years ago, I feel lucky in that mine went bad when it did, and I was able to get a replacement part and install it and fix my car. But relatively recently, I've had customers' cars come in because I do, I do have some older cars as customers that, they bring their car in. And recently here, you go to order that same part or look it up and try to find it through the normal outside suppliers. Nobody has it anymore. Okay, it's gone. Now, if you go on eBay or Amazon or whatever, you frankly, you don't really know what you're getting. Okay, I mean, I've seen ones that say like they're Bosch or whatever, but the price they're showing as retail is half what I would normally have paid myself, and I'm paying wholesale. It's half what I would have normally have paid to buy an actual, let's say, Bosch unit. Okay, now this ad on eBay or Amazon, whatever, it says it's a Bosch unit, but who knows? Okay, I mean, you don't know who this person is, whether it's an actual company or just some guy that's decided to, operate a business out of his garage or something. Okay, and you're talking about buying a safety part. That's a safety system part. ABS DSC is it's two different safety systems. Okay. So frankly, you really don't know what you're buying. Okay. So assuming you want to buy a known quality part from a known distributor who's been around for a while, okay, they're not available. You can't buy that ABS DSC unit. You have to go to the dealer. Well, all of a sudden a part that used to retail from, let's say, Bosch for maybe $600 or $700 or $800 now. You want to buy that part from the dealer if you want the actual proper factory known quality part, it's going to retail for like $1,600. Okay. So, what's really happening, whether it's by design or not, is because of that situation, when a car comes in that's an older car, it's got whatever, 100, 150,000 miles on it, obviously Blue Book on the car is less money. It might only be $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 for the value of that car now, as per Blue Book. So now you're talking about a car coming in that has an ABS DSC problem that, a few years ago could have been fixed for $700 or $800. Now you're looking at $1,800 to $2,000. Potentially, the average customer is going to go, "Well, forget it. The car's only worth two. I'm not going to fix it. I'm just going to get rid of it." Okay. So now the car is either sold to somebody else, it's traded in. Let's say it's traded in. You can be rest assured most used car, new car dealerships are not going to have any idea whatsoever of the idea of putting that thing on the front line to resell it. Okay. It's going to go to a wholesale auction. So the repair shop that would have normally have gotten the, repair dollars to fix that thing doesn't get it anymore. The car goes to a wholesale auction, and then who knows what happens to it after that. Okay. It may never actually get fixed. It potentially could end up going to maybe a third world country. Okay. That's where a lot of these cars go that maybe no longer are legal in this country because of safety issues or possibly smog issues. They get traded in, they get sold at a public auction or a, professional public auction to professional car brokers, and it's quite possible that some of those their whole mode of operation is to buy whatever cars they think will sell, and they get shipped off to third world countries, and nobody makes any repairs to them. So those repair dollars are lost. But ultimately, what does that end up doing as far as in this country? It puts a customer in the position that they're going to go out and buy either a new car or a newer car. Okay, so there we are. By design, the car manufacturers are making it harder and more expensive to keep a car on the road versus you trade it in and buy something newer. Okay. The only person who's really going to keep that on the road is either someone that is just loves the car and they're willing to invest the money into it, even though it may not financially make sense, or it goes to where now they're buying lower quality parts that it's questionable whether those parts are any good or not. It's questionable whatever warranty they may or may not have. It's questionable about where did that part come from. For a professional repair shop, it becomes, I mean, you're talking about opening up a can of worms, okay? People may think that being able to buy parts from eBay and Amazon is a great thing, and in some respects it is, okay? It certainly offers up a lot more options. But, I mean, when I started noticing this issue with this ABS DSC control module for some of these cars, I mean, I did some research on Amazon and eBay. And like I say, I find it hard to believe that when I see something that says, the ad says it's a Bosch unit and it's costing half what I would normally pay for what is actually a Bosch unit, one could question what that thing actually is. And as a professional shop, when a professional repair shop installs a part, that they are implying by the act of installing that part that it's the right part, that it's correct for the car, that it's going to meet or exceed original equipment specifications, okay? All those things are implied, okay? A person can go, well, how does that work? Because of the act of, we're the professional, okay? If we didn't think it was the right part, why did we put it on the car, okay? This is where it goes back to the idea of it's not a good idea to use customer-supplied parts. And I've done a podcast on that recently, or I should say previously, excuse me, a number of months ago. Matter of fact, if you want to check that out, I should have looked this up beforehand. It's called Customer Supplied Parts. Really? Episode number 15, Customer Supplied Parts. Really? Okay, I elaborate a lot more on that, on why that's not a good idea. I mean, not to be sarcastic or whatever, but one of the things I'm sure I know I say in that podcast is, you know, if you want to get the parts for your car, why don't you just fix it yourself, okay? Then that's not to say that there aren't shops that would be willing to install custom supply parts, but you are opening up a huge can of worms by, you know, expecting a shop to use your parts, okay? It's not a good idea for a shop to do that. And like I say, I explain why, certainly more so in the in that episode. So I think that's pretty much what I wanted to cover, really. A person could go, well, geez, Brad, what do I care about any of that? Parts proliferation, so what? Who cares? Well, like I say, it's part of the manufacturer being able to maintain control of parts supply. It's part of them being able to maintain control of the price of things. Again, that's not to say that there's not, you know, other options out there. There are, but this is something that they do. And, you know, whether it affects what you buy or, you know, so on and so forth, just understand it's a fact of life. It's just part of the business process of buying and owning and driving a car. It could be, like I say, some people may look at it as a plus that, hey, my car, you know, it had the facelift. Ooh, it's rare. Ooh, boy, you know, whatever. Well, okay, fine. I hope you appreciate that because, you know, if you're one of those people, the average people that have to take your car into the shop every 5 years to get some kind of paint or body damage taken care of, this is why it potentially is costing more money. Obviously, it raises insurance rates and so on and so forth. So, all part of the fun. Hopefully this just, you know, allows you to have a better understanding of what's going on out there. And, you know, if you are out buying your own parts, just, you know, word for the wise, just be careful of what you're getting. You know, don't believe everything you read or see or hear. And I realize that there's no way for someone to know How much that part should cost if it was a real part. It's not a knockoff or something like that. But you could sort of go by the adage that if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. But again, especially if you're talking about safety stuff, wheel speed sensors and, ABS systems, DSC systems, airbag systems, anything that has to do with traction control, steering, suspension, any of those things. You don't want to be putting cheap parts on the car, okay? It just is not, it's not worth it in so many ways. So I hope this has been informative to you. I hope I haven't bored you to death. Again, obviously, this is not, wasn't one of the first ones I thought of doing. It kind of came to my mind, and I actually learned about the term parts proliferation through a book. If you really want, I'm sure it's not in print anymore, but if you really want to read a somewhat depressing, somewhat depressing book, it was originally, I do not remember the author's name, but it was originally put out probably in the 80s. It's a very, very thick book. It's a long read. It was originally written by, he was an ex, I think, like Wall Street investigative reporter. I'm going to say it was, he was from Wall Street or one of the news, newspaper edition type things. But it's called Mr. Bad Wrench, the $20 billion a year auto repair ripoff. Okay. I mean, I read this book. I still have it somewhere, but it's probably packed away somewhere. But I read it strictly from the idea at the time, 1980s. I had just started professionally as a technician, and I thought, I happened to see the thing in a bookstore somewhere, and I picked it up and was just, briefly going through it and thought, wow, this is, a lot of information. Again, a person could look at it as, negative type stuff. I mean, let's face it, the title is not exactly real encouraging. But I will say that, the guy really, yes, he brought up a lot of negatives, how people can get, potentially ripped off in the auto repair scenario. But he really does cover everything as far as body shops, repair shops, the insurance, auto insurance world, how each one of them is trying to cover their own butt and obviously make money and so on and so forth. But there is also a lot of good stuff in there. He talks about, how technicians are paid and that it can be, it can be a tough way to make a living. Okay. And he talks about, how the insurance companies are trying to obviously cut down on costs and they're more than happy to take your premium, but they don't want to pay for anything. That's where I originally learned about parts proliferation, is that there's a chapter where he talks about it. And frankly, that's where I'm, pulling some of this information from. And that, and just, years of experience of dealing with the car repair process. So I hope you found this interesting and enlightening. Hopefully you're not too depressed. it's part of the process of owning and operating a car. So I appreciate you listening. As usual, if you want to get a hold of me via email, it's bkpodcasts5@gmail.com. I am also on LinkedIn. If you prefer to go through that, send me a message or whatever. Appreciate any ideas or thoughts you might have and comments. If you have any ideas for a podcast I haven't covered yet, by all means, shoot me an email and let me know. If I don't know something or I need to research it, not a problem. I'm more than happy to do that. My way of looking at it is I may not have thought about that particular subject as of yet. And so I'll do the research and put out a podcast, and that way we'll all know more, hopefully, anyway. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your listening. If you want to check out my shop website, it is Brad's Motor Works. I'm in Newbury Park, California. And we go from there. Hope you have a great day and a fantastic evening, and thank you again for listening. Thank you for listening to this episode. It's been an honor and a privilege to spend time with you. I hope you found this of value. Please share it with family and friends. Above all else, with all you're getting, get understanding. May God bless you and keep you, and thank you again.